Are you a mum looking for some parenting inspiration, tips and advice, stories on the ups and downs we face in our lives as parents, some humour and a little bit of fun? Then you may have just found what you're looking for. Hi and welcome to the Parenting in the Thick of It show. I'm your host Louise Clark, a certified parent coach known to many as your parenting partner. As a mum to three teenagers, you can bet I've probably been there, done that, and heard it all. Trust me, there'll be few things that I haven't experienced firsthand. I created this podcast because I just love to help mums like you find ways to navigate life in the thick of it and find a way out of it. Episode 604. When should I panic? What is too much screen time? And how will I know? Welcome to my podcast book club series on the book The Tech Diet for Your Child and Teen by Brad Marshall. This is part three of a 9-part series. And over the next few weeks, I will be going through each chapter of this book, highlighting all you need to know to come up with a media plan that is actually implementable, practical, and works. In today's episode, part three, I will be covering chapter five, Why? When should parents panic? And don't forget, the links to buy this book can be found in the show notes. And please note that I do not receive any money for any purchases made. Also, all information read and discussed in these episodes are copyright to the author, Brad Marshall. I hope that over the course of the holidays, or any time you're listening to this, you will be able to put into place a system to manage your kids' screen diets, and in doing so, better prepare you for possibly the new school year starting in September, but better prepare you any time you are listening to this. And please remember to rate and review this show to help more parents find it and get the help and support they need. And thank you to all of you who regularly tune in, to those of you who've taken the time to rate and review the show. I really do appreciate it. So on to chapter five. How many hours are too many? How will I know what the signs are? These are tough questions to answer. And when all is said and done, some parents panic too soon, whilst others don't panic soon enough. And in this chapter, the author discusses five key developmental milestones that kids simply must meet. And when one or two of these five domains or developmental milestone areas, I'll discuss them, if one or two of them get compromised, the result is really not good and it snowballs quickly. In my opinion, the information in this chapter is gold. So if you're listening right now, then pour yourself a cup of tea or go out for a walk and enjoy this episode because you are going to get so, so much from it. It is one of the longer chapters in the book. So this episode will probably be longer than normal. I try and keep them to 20 minutes, but I have a feeling this one might hit half an hour. That's how good it's going to be, guys. So sit back, relax, and enjoy what I am going to share with you. So he does talk about how many hours of screen time are too many, and the fact that a one-size-fits-all model just doesn't work because every child's different, every child's relationship with screens is different, and every child's temperament's different, the parents are different, the boundaries in the homes are different, the day's different, the amount of homework's different, so it's really difficult to ring-fence it, and I am in agreement with the author on this, that we really do have to have guidelines, but be present in our parenting to know that in any given moment, enough is enough, and are certain areas being compromised as a result of time on screens? And I often say it's not so much the time on screens that's the problem, it's the time lost in the real world that is more of the problem. And in his work as a psychologist, he's trained to assess all young people based on the impact of their symptoms on their developmental milestones. So he likes to look at this in terms of the impact of screens on these developmental milestones. And hopefully it's a way that you can relate to. So the five milestones are social development, educational development, behavioral development, emotional development, and health development. And as we go through each of these five areas, ask yourself this question: am I worried about my teenager in this area? And if so, how bad is it? So in for social development, let's look at that. It's one of the most common things he sees in the clients when they come in to parents come in to see him. And I would say it's probably the most common thing I see as well. Parents say, my kid is on his screens too much. He doesn't leave his room. He doesn't even have a social life. They might go on to say that they've dropped out of sports. They're not doing so well at school. They're staying up too late. If any of these resonate with you, then you need to know that quite possibly your child's social development, that is the ability for them to acquire the skills they need to be socially responsible human beings, might be compromised. And teenagers will, of course, argue until they're blue in the face that gaming and spending time in front of screens is social because they're doing it with friends. He says at the top of page 90, I encourage you not to fall for this. Don't get sucked into the argument. It's a clever trap that many a parent has been tempted to enter, but I warn you, it's an ambush. Run. And he says, well, don't actually physically run, but he does say, don't enter the argument because your teenager will never, ever be able to see your side of it, and you will likely not be able to understand theirs. So what you have to do, and I agree here, is we have to accept their point of view that they think they're right, validate it and say, you know, I understand that you've got friends online, but you have to stick firm with your boundaries. And for those of you who tune into the show regularly, I cannot tell you how many of the 603 episodes I have done on this show that I talk about boundaries. It's absolutely essential for you to be the captain of the ship and be very clear with your boundaries and hold the limits. Don't enter the argument though, because it will go downhill and that you'll never do well. So he does say, like any of these developmental domains, kids reach developmental milestones at different times. So you do have to kind of know what, you know, what's normal for a 13-year-old, a 15-year-old, a 17-year-old, a 19-year-old, and keep it in the context of that. But look for any changes in their social skills now compared to previously. For example, if you've had a highly social child that was out all the time and now they don't go out, this is a cause for concern. If you've had a child that's been part of a sports team and now they don't want to play the sport, this is a red flag. So any activity or interest that results in a dramatic decrease in a child's social activity will likely have an impact on their overall social development. And we need to be cognizant of where our kids gain social skills. And we can't just blanket it and say, you know, for all of them it's X, Y, and Z. For primary school children, you know, they get social skills from being in play dates with friends, going to school, team sports, activities. These are highlighted in a table on page 93. And, you know, playing with other kids in the neighborhood, they might be playing, you know, street hockey, or they might go down and play shoot hoop in the school playground. These are good areas for kids to develop their social skills. And in high school, these same areas apply, but they'll start going to the movies. They might start going to the park or the beach. Depending on where you live, they might go shopping on their own. They might go to group gatherings, and then they enter the dreaded party scene. I've been there. It's scary. But they also, all of them, develop social skills through interacting at family events with parents, with grandparents, with aunts and uncles, with their cousins, with siblings, during the holidays and in team sports. So there's lots of areas where they develop these skills. So they need to be exposed to these areas so they develop the skills. And we need to make sure that we offer them that opportunity. And when they say they are getting all these social skills from being online, the online face-to-face, quote-unquote, doesn't cut it. It has to be real time. And on page 95, he gives a really great example of when your kid might have said, you know, I don't want to play hockey or basketball or synchronized swimming or whatever it is, their team sport or individual sport they're in. Here's what he says if they say they want to give it up. He suggests that you say, it's okay if you don't want to do X, but you have to do something. So you can replace X with another sport. What sport's it going to be? And he says one of two things will happen. One, if it's genuine and they're not enjoying X, they will pick up a new sport. If he was just saying it to hopefully free up more time to spend online, your child will likely get angry and reluctantly accept that you called his bluff and you won't hear about it until the next time he feels he has the basis for a new argument and has another crack at it. The other area where he says we can sometimes make some progress here is if you know other parents, the parents of your kids' friends, and you can collectively come up with kind of a set of screen rules, so to speak, so that your child and their friend, typically we can only do this when the kids are slightly younger, but making sure that all their friends' parents are on the same page. So if you can somehow gather together as a community so that your kid is not the only one. They will always say they're the only one, but you will actually know they're not. So he encourages parents to think ahead to the next stage in your teen's life. And if your child has real world or face-to-face social development is replaced during the teenage years, think of all the social challenges that will lie ahead. How will they manage that first job? How will they sit in front of somebody else and answer questions? Are they being interviewed on the content of their answers or the eye contact, small talk, body language your teen has learned during the years of socializing? And if they don't acquire these skills, they're going to find it incredibly hard and quite possibly won't land the jobs they want to, because he says at the bottom of this paragraph, I can tell you what I look for when I'm hiring staff in my clinic, and the perfect answers alone won't land you the job. You know when someone is good socially, and we want to employ people who are good socially. So we need to make sure and do our kids a favor and give them the opportunity to develop these social skills. So what are the warning signs? The warning signs are dropping out of team sports, avoiding going to any family events, distancing themselves from old friendship groups and not replacing them with new ones, older teens not going out at all on the weekends, little or even no face-to-face contact with friends during school holidays, and declining invitations from friends to hang out. So the social development is absolutely key. The educational one is important. It's easier for us as parents to keep track of and measure it. But I always recommend parents don't get so stuck on the grades per se, but look at effort and improvement. And if there's effort and improvement, then encourage that. Reflect that back to your kids so they know what needs to be done in order to get where they want to get. So he says don't get stuck on grades as well. And for primary school age children, he actually suggests to check the report cards for grades and effort, check in with the teacher. And he recommends that actually having a meeting with the teacher or a phone call with the teacher is better than via, you know, email or anything else, because it's just easier to have that conversation. Same thing with high school age children, but other markers of educational development might be not getting homework or assignments done, a dramatic drop in grades, or avoiding school altogether. He gives examples in each of these areas with an actual case study, which are very interesting. But I'm not going to go through all of these because it will simply take too long. But he says these days, the majority of kids I see are more likely to avoid school to stay home, and their school refusal is typically linked in some way to internet and gaming use. And any teacher will tell you this can become a predictable cycle. The more time they spend trying to catch up in class or take days off, the more distracted they are, and hence they're not absorbing the lesson of that day. The warning signs for educational development are a significant drop in grades, panic at night when it's bedtime and they haven't finished their work. We've all experienced that when it, you know, it comes close to their bedtime, you remind them it's bedtime and they start getting very angst. They might even become verbally abusive because they know they haven't been doing the work between, say, 7 and 9, and now it's getting later, they have to do it, so they'll panic. Patterns of not completing homework or assessments on time, and if they start missing or avoiding school, these are signs that their educational milestones are not being met. The third area is behavioural, and this is a really important one. So what you're looking for is a change in behaviour, and you know, what changes might you see? And in this chapter, he talks about how you might suddenly, you might not, it, there's no sudden thing, I shouldn't have said sudden, but you might start to see slow changes, but changes in the way in which they handle things. So they might become more inclined to have a meltdown. They might start breaking stuff. They might get violent. They might get verbally abusive. They might start swearing or yelling. And he talks about oppositional behavior, which he describes as an odd term, considering he's yet to meet a child, including his own, who will happily do whatever you ask with a great big smile on their face. So I'm not a fan of this oppositional defiance disorder, and these labels of kids being defiant and oppositional. I think that's actually quite normal in teenagers, because my kids don't love doing the chores or love doing the things I ask them, and they might come across as oppositional. But if you see a big change in their behavior, these are alarm bells. They can also start getting physical. They could get physical with you and become aggressive with you. They can get physical and destructive with property. They might break anything, you know, their stuff, your stuff, the wall. And he talks about great grandma's vase that's been passed down for generations. So look for changes. And he, the author, has been accused in the past of sensationalizing many cases where, you know, behavior has become extreme and the behavior has escalated and it's got out of control and kids are breaking things. And in one case, he had a child, well, I say one case, but he says he's actually seen hundreds of these cases where the parents were so concerned about the child's increasing violence that they actually had to seek what's called in Australia as an AVO against the child to protect the family. The neighbours became so worried about hearing increasing noise, they called the police. And he says he has seen this time and time again. So as much as this seems very alarming and very extreme, it is happening. And these parents, many of them are not brave enough to speak up about it. And they realize that many friends and family just don't believe what's going on because they don't see it. They have to see it to believe it. And he does say that the earlier you intervene with boundaries and a healthy tech diet, the better off you are. I mean, he says it's easier to deal with a 7-year-old than a 17-year-old having a meltdown. And I agree with that. So if you have a child that is increasingly not following rules, is swearing more, is verbally aggressive more, is increasingly or regularly breaking things at home or showing any signs of physical aggression, this is a warning sign that the behavior is getting out of control and you need to do something about it. And he talks about on page 108 the dopamine. And remember the dopamine effect. It's the wonder chemical that is delivered to your brain when you are doing something you enjoy, like gaming or being online for kids. So it makes total sense. When you suddenly take this away from them, they don't get the dopamine hit. They crash, they get low. And they might go from becoming fairly relaxed to being very angry and frustrated, violent and even aggressive. It makes sense. It's like taking a crack away from a crack addict, taking drugs away from a drug addict. They will go into withdrawal. They will show signs of aggression and behavior changes when they don't get the dopamine hit. The fourth area is emotional development, which is a really, really important one. All of these are important. In my opinion, the social one's super important. The emotional one is really important. And the fifth one, the health development, is obviously really important. So for kids to be well regulated, emotionally regulated, we ourselves as parents need to be good role models. So if we become stressed out and we become, I'm going to say verbally aggressive, then it's not role modeling the right thing for our kids. But we need to be able to handle their meltdowns, and they need to be able to know how to self-soothe and calm down themselves. And many kids will say, it's okay, I know how to calm down, but they're using their phones as soothers. They're using their screens as soothers. And this is, it's short-term relief. It doesn't help. And we need to know what is a normal for teenagers, which can be really hard. And we all know, if you're a parent of a teenager, you know how explosive, how impulsive, how highly emotional they can be. So what is normal? So you're looking at, again, changes in their ability to emotionally regulate. If they fly off the handle for no reason more than normal, if they become aggressive and very upset when their screen time ends, you know this is a sign that they are perhaps online too much and they're needing some emotion coaching. It is a very difficult one to quantify with parents. And as he says, children and teenagers don't come hardwired as experts in dealing with their emotions. So how are we supposed to know what is normal in this area and what is a marker of something amiss? And he says these are important skills we need in order to be healthy adults that come as our brain develops and also through the hard knocks of experience. So I've done many podcasts on emotional coaching and how to recognize signs where kids are dysregulated and need some help regulating themselves. And it's natural that teenagers will have ups and downs. But he says it's a bit far-fetched for him to worry that a young person spending a large chunk of their time online in their bedroom may be missing some of these key life experiences that build emotional skills. And when gauging developmental domains, most of them will involve asking, is it increasing in intensity and frequency? Are the tantrums, are the emotional upsets becoming more frequent, and are they becoming more intense? And, when our kids are spending a lot of time online and then we ask them to come off, they become very irritable and angry when they're asked to do simple tasks at home. And they might lash out at you, they might even lash out at teachers. So you need to speak to your teachers, make sure that your kids are somehow managing to manage their emotional regulation. And if not, then you need to perhaps get some help and look at ways in helping them to emotionally regulate. And you might need to have some boundaries and limits on their screen time. So looking at patterns, what are the patterns, the emotional patterns that you're seeing? And do you think your child is using screens to soothe, using their phone to soothe? And if they are, how are they going to learn positive strategies for coping with negative emotions if they have this ready-made solution at their fingertips where the only way they can calm down is to use screens? It's not a viable option, and we need to be able to give them emotional tools that they can use to soothe and regulate themselves. I've talked about this in many of my podcast episodes. And in the next few chapters in this book, the strategies and his steps for implementing a healthy tech diet, he covers this in great detail. So again, warning signs for emotional development is increasing frequency of an emotional outburst, increasing intensity of emotional outbursts, and increased duration it takes for them to calm down. Really important areas that our kids really need to learn the skills in order to be able to soothe and self-regulate. And many adults find it hard to regulate. Many adults today get more angry than they used to. They're frustrated. They don't know how to handle their own frustrations and perhaps anger. So we need to look at ourselves, and because we're a mirror to our kids, and role modeling ourselves being able to calm down is a really good thing and good for you to do with your kids. The fifth and last area is health development. And he talks about five different areas. And the first one you've heard me talk about many, many times on the show. It is sleep. The second one is exercise. The third is nutrition. Fourth is posture. And fifth is personal hygiene. All of these areas need to be met in order for our kids to develop in a healthy way. Sleep is sacred. He says he can't stress this enough. And you know that I'm a huge fan of this. And I heard a stat somewhere recently. It's not in this book, but I heard it that a 10-year-old today gets on average 2 hours less sleep per night than a child born 10 years ago. This is huge. And sleep specialists say that teenagers need 9 to 10 hours of solid sleep per night. That is not going into their rooms for 9 to 10 hours. You have to ask yourself, where are their phones? Are they using their phones as alarm clocks? Do you know categorically that they're not on their phones at night? If they are, they're probably not getting the sleep they need. They will be sleep deprived, and this will play right into them being, that will influence the other areas of these milestones of development, their social, their behavioral, their educational, and their emotional. So we need to make sure our kids are getting enough sleep. We also need to make sure that our kids are getting enough exercise. It's absolutely key that they are moving, that they are taking part in sport. We are all spending more time sitting at screens. So we have to counteract this by making sure we move enough. And the more exercise the kids do, the less time they will be arguing about screens and the more likely they are to sleep well. So again, it's what they're not doing as a result of being on screens. And many of them are on screens too much because they're at sports too little. So he's got this quick, I'm jumping the gun here because I'm moving on to nutrition. But he's got warning signs for nutrition that they are, kids need to have a balanced diet. We all know that, you know that. But what happens is kids will end up rushing through their meals to get back to screens. If you see that they're rushing meals to get back through screens, if they're refusing to eat meals with the family, they want to take their food to their rooms, or they are skipping meals altogether, these are warning signs in this area. And basically, if the screen is a higher priority than eating, he says you might have a problem on your hands. And on page 121, he has this quick experiment. So he says you offer your child dinner at their favorite restaurant. If they enter into solid negotiations about how long it will take and when they need to be home and place their little sister on a timer to ensure they spend the least amount of time away from their computer as possible, you might have a mild problem. If they demand to bring their device along to the dinner in order to minimize the downtime and stipulate that it's the only way you'll have the privilege of paying for their favorite meal, that's pretty worrying. If they flat out refuse, no questions asked, they're not moving, he says that's headed down the serious end. The last two on this list are posture and personal hygiene. As a physiotherapist myself, I know that when I've been sitting at a screen too much, I'm likely to go into what I call the vulture position, where my chin's poked forward and I'm sitting with my head too far forward, my shoulders are rounded, the natural curves in my spine are no longer there. It's not good. So if we are sitting, we need to pay attention to how we're sitting. And this can be solved quite well by sort of looking at the ergonomics and making sure your kid's screen height's at the right height, that they're sitting upright, that the top of the screen is at eye level or just below. And this can be a problem with laptops, and that their lower backs are supported, you're resting, your shoulders are relaxed, and that your shoulders are not in your ears, that your kid's shoulders are not hunched or rounded. There's lots of things you can do, but again, to try and get your own child to do this is very, very hard. Much easier to tell another child rather than try and tell your own. My kids don't want to listen to me. The other area that can show some warning signs that these developmental areas are not being met is in personal hygiene. If they are refusing to perform the basics, being showering, washing, going to the bathroom, using deodorant, brushing their teeth, then when self-care is typically refused, not because they have some great aversion to it, but simply because it's taking away from screen time, this is a cause for concern. The warning signs are secret attempts to stay up late or waking up early to get online, avoiding sports altogether in order to be on screens, refusing family meals or showering due to screen time. So on page 127, actually on page 126, there's some very good information here. Talking about parental controls, we often put parental controls on our kids' screen time, phone time, what they can use, when they can use it, for how long, etc. Most of you listening will be familiar with this, and most of you listening probably recognize that your kids can get around these parental controls. I certainly know in my Facebook group, the Parenting in the Thick of It Facebook group, if you haven't joined, head over there and I will receive your request to join the group, and I can let you in. There's some amazing stuff being posted. Parents are getting a lot of help in there. And many of them post types of parental controls and what works and what doesn't. But many parents are concerned because they know that their kids can get around it. And he's saying it's not that it never works, but his experience, it's child's play for a savvy teenager to get around parental controls. And he goes into this in the tech diet chapter, where he explains the unplugged steps. So sleep is sacred, guys. And when sleep is compromised, it's a slippery slope. And he talks on page 127, and I'm nearly there, and I knew I would go over 30 minutes, and we're at 32 and a half now. I've got probably another 5 minutes here. But it's really important to understand that when any one of these areas is compromised, particularly two, it goes downhill fast. And he has a great table at the bottom of page 127. So the first developmental area he talks about is health. So they stay up too late. Emotionally, they can then become irritable with teachers and friends. Socially, they might argue with friends. They might argue with you. They then skip their exercise they skip training to avoid friends at training. They avoid the party so they can get more game time. Or if they're staying up too late, they become tired in class, so their education developmental milestone might be compromised. Then they get frustrated by homework, so they avoid doing it by escaping into their games, or they're becoming too tired and not being able to focus influences their behavior. And then that all influences their health. They stay up late again, which influences the emotional and education and behavioral milestones. So it's all so interlinked. And you can see how when one or two are compromised, it affects them all. So at the start of the chapter, he did explain that we need to put it all in context. So let's recap with a concrete example. It is normal for a teenager to not want to go to bed on time and to try to stay up late. It is not normal for a teenager to regularly stay up into the wee hours in the morning. So if you're genuinely not sure what is considered normal, then ask for help. Go to your GP, get in touch with your child's school counsellor. You might even seek the services of a licensed medical professional. A parent coach may be able to help you as well. And at the end of this chapter, on page 129, 30 and 31, he has a checklist. It's a should I panic parent checklist. And he has three boxes you can check. One is never happens. Two is started to happen, sometimes happened. And three, it's out of control. And you can check these to get an idea of areas where any of these developmental milestones might be compromised. I'm going to read through them quickly because it's really important. Using screens when he, she should be asleep. Getting less than the recommended amount of sleep. Skipping meals because he or she is too distracted. Dropping out of sports and activities without replacing them. Avoiding or skipping sports, training or games to go online. Skipping showers or toilet breaks. Time online with friends over time in real life with friends. Little or no age-appropriate social events on weekends, school holidays. Significant drop in grades. Regularly not finishing schoolwork due to time spent online. Missing or avoiding days at school. Stolen money or ran up credit card to purchase items in a game or app. Stolen money or ran up credit card to gamble online. Frequently swearing or verbal aggression when asked to get off screens. Breaking or throwing things when asked to get off screens or when arguing about access. Physical aggression of any kind when asked to get off screens or when arguing about access. Increasing duration of emotional meltdowns when time online is limited. He says this is a questionnaire and should not be used as a diagnostic tool. It is merely designed to guide your level of concern. He then, at the end of this chapter, welcomes us all to the favourite part of his book. Enough with the stats and theory, let's talk about practical steps you can take in your home today. And in chapters 12. So in chapters 6 through 11, I will discuss with you what the tech diet is and the unplugged steps. There's step 1 to 7, and they are absolutely fantastic. It's really going to help you. So don't forget to continue to tune into the show. And I hopefully will be interviewing the author very soon. And we can end this podcast book club series with an interview with the author. If you haven't yet purchased the book, I would recommend heading over to the podcast show notes where you can click into the Amazon links, whether you are in the US, whether you are in Canada or Australia. The author's from Australia, so I've included the links to the amazon.au in the show notes. So thank you again for tuning in. Sorry that this one was longer than usual. Yes, I'm about to hit 40 minutes, but I think it was valuable information. We really need to be aware of what our kids are missing out on developing as a result of too much time spent online. That's what it boils down to. Are they missing out on developing social skills, educational skills, behavior skills, emotional skills, and health skills? If so, we need to be looking at some form of tech plan diet in order to make sure that our kids are meeting the essential developmental milestones that they need to meet in order to be healthy, respectful, responsible, social, great kids. So thank you so much for listening. I do look forward to being with you soon. And if you haven't yet rated and reviewed this show, please hop over onto whatever podcast platform you tune in on. And please do so. It helps this show reach more people and more parents who are struggling. So thank you again for listening. Till next time, bye for now. That's it for today's episode on the Parenting in the Thick of It show. If you enjoyed the show, please do share it with your friends and family. And remember, if you find yourself stuck in the thick of it and can't see a way out of it, please send me an email. I would love to help you. My email is louise@yourparentingpartner.com. And don't forget to take a look at the Parenting in the Thick of It family organizer that I created. It's an evergreen family calendar guaranteeing 12 months of use from whenever you start. It also includes beautifully illustrated, informative, and interactive monthly parenting theme pages to guide you through the year. It's the perfect organizer for busy families to keep track of all their activities, plus help parents be the best parent they can be. It's more than just a calendar. You can find the link for this and the other social media platforms that I am on below the description in this episode. Thank you so much for listening today, and I look forward to being with you all soon. Bye for now.